irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle right here on LA Talk Radio.
You are, and you finally, are. With some rain in the background.
Broken windows, empty hallways,
nice.
Pale dead moon, and a sky streaked with gray. Human kindness is overflowing, and I think it's going to rain today.
Thank you for knowing
Thank
that.
Thank you.
Rain. Old Randy Newman.
Should we go into It Never Rains in California? We could just do a rain medley.
We could.
All right.
That's a whole Soon other it's gonna. Show. Okay.
Or Make It Rain, great Tom Waits tune.
I can't stand the rain.
Nice. Yes.
Very you. Different. I'm sorry. Someone goosed that soprano. Where did you get that from? He brought it all the way from New York.
Here we go. Do I have to deflate him and put him back in the closet?
Put him back.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, my goodness. How are you, Paul?
I am good.
Shall we thank our sponsors?
Thank our sponsors, Michael,
yes.
would you?
Yes, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. And to learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
I don't know if that was a casting director or an agent. I'm not sure.
Or a cowboy auditioning for something.
Not sure. We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources. I always feel just a little naughty when I say that. The Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
As always, yes.
Yes. So here's who we got.
Yeah,
here's
please,
who we got.
Go
Best
on.
Known for his performance as Bob Gaudio.
I think you're talking about me.
Yeah. Is that right?
Oh, yes.
I got the pronunciation right?
Yes.
In the Clint Eastwood, I have
That's
that right?
That would be Clint Eastwood.
Eastwood, okay. Film of Jersey Wood. Boys, reprising the role he's played on stage for over 3 years, and his co-starring role in the CBS nighttime drama Madam Secretary, as well as many other TV credits, including Gossip Girl, Desperate Housewives, and Person of Interest. We are delighted to have this gentleman back on State of the Arts, and we're just as delighted to tell you, our audience, where you can see him live. Very, very soon, right here in Los Angeles. Please welcome the incredible Eric Bergen.
Thank you. No, please sit. Thank you. I love that you mentioned all of my TV. So Gossip Girl, Desperate Housewives, Person of Interest, and Madam Secretary. I played the title role in all of them.
Did you?
Yes.
Did you?
The most desperate, the most madam, the most...
You're one of those so much chameleons.
Gossip. Yeah, yes.
You're a chameleon.
Yes.
Is that what you dry your car with?
Yes.
Yes. I dry my car with a dry list. I'm not speaking in euphemisms.
My goodness. We also, ladies and gentlemen, are joined by an accomplished actor who has among his numerous acting credits starring on Broadway and in London as Molina in Kiss of the Spider Woman, opposite Cheetah Rivera, and Vanessa Williams. Master of the House in Les Miserables and Tybalt in Romeo and Juliet.
Tybalt,
excuse me. I knew that if I said it, it would be wrong.
Tyra Banks.
I started
and
to leave it up.
Did you just say, I knew that if I said it, it would be wrong?
Yes.
Oh,
yes. Directed by Tony Award winner Bartlett Sher. But today he's put on his fully feathered director's cap. Got to be careful how you say that.
Did
to
I
discuss
write that?
His production of the Los Angeles.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to say fuck by mistake.
Oh,
no.
That's it. Man, the ratings just plummeted.
No.
Look at the time.
Okay. He's here to discuss his production of the Los Angeles County premiere of Violet, the musical, at the El Portal Theater in North Hollywood. Please welcome Joshua Finkel.
Oh, my goodness. There they are again. And out.
You're so smart.
You have that same soundbite, don't you?
I did. You know what? Ever since the last time I was on the show, it made me laugh so much that I actually downloaded something on my phone and I use it around my
ringtone. Our listeners should know that you actually just conducted it and your hands went down perfectly.
Yes.
With the so someone needs a hobby.
Yes. I did. That is my hobby. I have it on my phone now.
Good to have you both.
Thank
good
you.
To have
hey.
You both.
Good
to
and
be- to
before we talk to Eric and Josh,
yes.
I wanted to just ask you how your week was.
My week was great.
Yeah.
We had our first read-through. We have a read-through, and then we have a little bit of a gap before we start rehearsing, but I'm doing August Osage County at the Will Geer Theatricum Botanicum. There's something you have to be careful.
That play doesn't end as well as you'd hope it would.
No, it doesn't. And I was
doing
Mary Poppins, and they asked me if I was going to audition for Oklahoma, which is the next thing that Cabrillo is doing, and I said, oh, I'm going to a different section of Oklahoma.
Yes.
Sort of.
I don't know if you could get farther from Mary Poppins to August Osage County and still call both a theatrical presentation.
But Julie Andrews, fantastic in both.
She was.
She's a pill popper, but she knows her. But no, so we...
Well, isn't the Botanicum in the Topanga...
The Topanga Canyon. Yeah, Will Geer's Theatricum Botanicum.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
And the amazing... And his daughter, the amazing Ellen Geer, playing Violet, the role that Rondi Reed won the Tony Award for, and the one that Meryl Streep did in the film. And also his granddaughter Willow Geer is in it, and Susan Angelo plays Barbara. She's lovely. I have a couple of scenes with her.
She's wonderful.
Happy to show that. Do you know Susan Angelo?
Yes. I work with her at California Lutheran University.
Really? She still owes me money.
Okay, we'll get on that in September. I won't see her at those events. I'll come see your show, and then I'll quarter her.
I thought you were about to say Susan Anton, and I thought she's doing August Osage County.
With Julie Andrews. They're both in it.
Wow.
She should.
What a production that's going to be.
The musical.
Yes. The musical.
Oh, my goodness. I just wanted to give a shout out, Paul.
Yes.
To Panic Productions and our friend, actor director Barry Pearl.
Yes. Barry Pearl.
Yeah, for a fun and very heartfelt production of Jason Robert Brown's musical 13.
It's wonderful.
Yes, which ran last weekend, May 8th and 9th, at the historic El Portal Theater in North Hollywood. And of course, the uniqueness of the piece is the fact that, as it was on Broadway, the entire cast is composed of only teenagers.
Yeah.
And, you know, who through a series of familiar young life conflicts and challenges master what the true meaning of what it is to be cool. And speaking of cool, the young cast was just that and more. Each triple threat performers beautifully directed by Mr. Pearl with smooth moves choreographed by Keenan Hooks and spot-on musical direction by Jeff Gibson with a contemporary book by Dan Elish and Robert Horn. Rumor has it that the show may open for an extended run in Los Angeles come fall.
I read a good review on, well, you peasants call it Facebook. I call it Libro di Faccia. That's what I call it. I was on Libro
so
de Faccia
Italian
today.
Yes. Wow.
Or Biblioteca Visage.
.it. Okay.
Anyway, it was a good review for that was on there. And it was just this past weekend, right? It was only two shows?
It was, Friday and Saturday.
Yeah.
And
because of labor laws for the kids, really.
Well, they don't each have to do one act.
Oh, my God, and the Wranglers.
It's very
expensive.
They
were fabulous. I saw it. They were fantastic.
I know.
Oh, my.
He was a joy, Barry Pearl, having him on the show.
He was. He's just a little... He's a lovely man, very animated and interesting and passionate.
That was all I could do to keep from calling him Duty the whole time. I just kind of, Duty, you know, because he was Duty in the film of Greece.
In Greece, yes, he was.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah. Among a million other things.
Yeah,
calling someone Duty is a little tricky.
It's a good Paul Lind word, though.
Yeah.
Duty.
Duty.
It's a good Paul Lind word.
Who'd you play? Duty.
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 And then Saturday night, caught Miss Sally Kellerman at the
was she great?
31st annual stage benefit at the beautiful Saban Theater in Beverly Hills, along with Patrice Morrison, who was celebrating her 100th birthday.
Wow. Patricia Morrison?
Patricia, yes. I'm sorry, but yes, Patricia.
She was what was her big show?
Kiss Me Kate.
Right,
sitting in a chair, singing So in Love.
Oh, wow.
Yes, and never missed a note.
Wow.
How was the attendance, Michael? Was it a good-sized group?
Totally packed.
See, he was so over-concerned.
David Galligan was a guest.
We had David
on
the show, and
Sally Galligan.
And he was a little concerned about attendance, and she was like, don't worry about it. Everyone leaves everything in the last minute in Los Angeles.
And she was, you know, her usual magical self
on
the stage.
She was.
Yeah?
She was.
It's just
that's pretty good.
Hidden Valley Ranch. Just loved having her. It was... I tell you, I was all a tither when she was
so many many
I was sitting here beside myself. I was.
There were two of you.
There were. As I've
just
been
now.
Want, as I've been wanting to do.
Across his eyes.
Yeah. She was wonderful.
Yes. So the whole evening was wonderful, and they raised a few $100,000 for AIDS Project Los Angeles and
it's the
programs.
31st year.
31st.
Yeah. Over 5 million they've done.
Yeah. Collectively, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. Amazing.
Unfortunately, 5 million shows? That sounds like a lot.
5 million shows, yes.
Just that night.
Yes.
I hear those shows are long, so that was all in one
they're
night.
Really committed.
Yes.
It was like 2 years long.
That's fantastic. And no intermission.
No intermission.
It was like S training. You
it
can't
is.
Pee.
Yeah,
exactly. And all 100
an intermission.
No.
100-year-old performers, every one of them.
Right. Well, Willard not when they
Scott.
Started.
Yeah. Right.
They were the cast of 13.
Oh, my.
Oh, dear.
Lord.
Oh, my.
So, Michael, introduce the annoying man to your left. Would you?
I think we
the non-equity performer to your left.
As Paul mentioned earlier, ladies and gentlemen, our first guest currently stars as Blake Moran.
Yeah.
In the hit CBS drama, Madam Secretary. Last year, he starred as Bob Gaudio in the Clint Eastwood-directed musical film Jersey Boys, reprising his award-winning performance from the national tour, Los Angeles and Las Vegas stage productions. Next Thursday and Friday, he will bring his dry wit and smooth vocals to the Catalina Bar and Grill with musical director Michael Orland, one of our friends from American Idol, of course, and a 10-piece band. Things are looking up here.
Well, Michael only uses 9 fingers when he plays, so we need to make up for it in some, you know.
Oddly enough, he uses 9 fingers, but he can still hit all the keys.
Isn't that amazing? Yes.
What does he do with that other one? Well, there you go.
There's only so much time on the show.
Michael. Yes, indeed. The show will feature songs from Eric's stage and screen career and songs from his 2 EP releases, his self-titled debut, and the recent Never Give Up. Please welcome Eric Bergen.
Hello. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, we get serious.
All of a sudden, this is like ESPN radio.
Yes.
I know.
Yes.
I'm in the wrong place.
Okay. Okay, so.
How does that sound for Millionaire? It's like, you know.
Right. We had Eric back on when he was nobody.
Right.
And.
yep.
And now look at
it's
you.
It's so nice. Yeah, they all come crawling back. Yep. They all come crawling back.
It's you have a studio with a window now.
That's how long ago it was?
You were in the old space. Yes.
Oh, yeah, with the chalk outline on the floor and the handcuff marks on the radio.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, the glamour of show business.
Whatever did happen to Ken Werther?
Oh, my.
Sometimes he doesn't listen.
No, it's good to be here. I love hearing you guys.
No, but I got to ask you something about working with Clint Eastwood.
Yes.
A lot of people don't know what a musical genius he is. He plays piano, and he's got a great appreciation for music, as many people know, from doing Bird.
Bird, yes, absolutely. And he wrote the scores to a lot of his movies.
Yes.
Right.
He wrote for the
Million Dollar Baby.
But the one about the car.
Gran Torino.
Gran Torino, yeah.
Yeah, no, he's sort of a jazz aficionado. And he, in fact, the sound stage at Warner Brothers, the scoring stage, is named after him. And any piano that was on set, you know, when they yelled cut, he would sit down and start to play music. It was pretty wonderful to see him do that.
Now, what I'm curious about is in the process of here you are, done the role 3 years, and also John Lloyd Young, who did it for so long. How much work did he leave to you, and how, like, what was that process? I hear that he's very good about letting actors do their own thing.
That's his whole thing. In fact, in the audition, it was a minute and a half audition tape. He wasn't there. It was me and a casting director and a video camera, and then I got a call a month later. There was no callback. There was no nothing. There was just, he hires actors that he think are the best for the job, and then trusts them, which is such a rarity in this day and age.
That was the extent of the audition process.
That was the audition. It was 90 seconds in a room, 2 scenes, a song, and then I got the job a month later. There was not even a call that said, "We're thinking." It was nothing. It was like, "We'll decide soon." And then he called and said, "Yes, you got the part."
Okay.
So did you think you didn't get it because of the delay?
No, because they kept saying we haven't decided yet.
Oh,
it was the whole thing was so odd to even be considered for the job to begin with, because they had started to do this movie first with Jon Favreau as the director, and I went and auditioned for that. It was about a year before, about 7 months before I auditioned for Clint. Jon Favreau had it, and I auditioned for it and didn't get the part. I was told I was not right for the role that I had played for 3 years.
Right, right.
So so obviously they were going a different way with
it. Patricia Morris.
But yes.
Susan
and
Anton.
Susan Anton no, is
and Sally Kellerman.
Jersey Boys. Yes. And so, you know, then I got it, and you're right. It's very much that he wants to see your instincts first. Okay. And when you have never starred in a studio feature film and Clint Eastwood is the director and he says, "Yeah, do what you feel." You want to poop. I mean, you just want to sit there and die.
Yeah.
And so over time, you start to realize that, no, this isn't a test. He actually would rather see what you do. It's not some sort of game to see if you do the right thing. If you go off, he'll guide you back. And a lot of time, his notes were pacing. It was, you know, speed it up, things like that. But overall, the reason why he hired us, or me and so many of us who had done the show, is because we were the right people for the job.
Right,
that's
right, right.
Why he was able to get the movie together so fast. Mm-hmm. And that was his whole thing. He kept on saying, why would I reinvent a wheel that has worked so well?
Yeah, yeah.
I can't find anyone better than people who have done it 1,500 performances.
And you also have the gift of having people, which...
Singing.
Who are doing the roles that are doing their own singing.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. We recorded all of it live. We did it just like rock concerts. It's why some of the sound in the movie is sort of wonky. It doesn't sound as crisp as the Broadway show does, because he really wanted to capture the idea that you were in the room at some club with a crappy sound system in 1962.
Right, right.
He's very into the realism.
Well, yeah, because the minute you hear, we've all been there, watched films like that, where the minute they open their mouth, everything is so pristine and so clean. It just takes you completely out of the
right.
scene you're
sure.
in.
Sure.
Right.
You know? Didn't he also go to the show on the road and not unannounced, actually?
He did. Before he actually signed on to doing it, he wanted to go around to all the different companies, Broadway in Chicago and San Francisco and Vegas, and to watch how audiences reacted, and also to see who was doing the role.
Mm-hmm.
He never saw me do the role, but I got to him, another way. I paid him. No. and yeah, so he was very into, in fact, there was a different script written by John Logan, who wrote, the play Red, and who wrote the films of Skyfall and Gladiator.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
There was a script by him. And Clint saw the script and said, well, no, let's go back to what made Jersey Boys a hit to begin with. And that's the script from the stage version written by Marshall Brickman and Rick Ellis. And that's what we used for the film.
Is it? Oh, so how modified is that, though?
It's about 70% the Broadway show.
Really?
And even things that are changed, they are dialogue from other scenes put in a different setting or a different way, or you'll hear lines from it. But, I mean, there's some stuff that's verbatim from the Broadway show.
Wow.
Yeah.
Unheard of.
Well,
yeah.
I love the movie.
Well, thank you. You're the one.
Big fan.
Thank you.
No,
we had. It's one of those things. It was the biggest show in the world. There was no way to meet people's expectations on a general level.
Right.
That you just couldn't. The show was still running. The show was still fresh in people's minds, and there was no way to meet everyone's different expectations of what the movie was. In their mind, supposed to be. I love the movie, and a lot of people love the movie. And what's really interesting to me is that I keep running into people who have never seen the show, and they have only seen the movie,
right.
Especially internationally. And I hear from these people on Twitter and things like that. And a friend of mine who works on Madam Secretary actually had seen the movie, and then recently, about a month ago, went to go see the Broadway show. And I said, oh, my God. And she loved the movie, and she was so excited to go see the show. And at around 9:30, 9:45, she calls me, and I see the phone ringing. And I answer, like, so what do you think? She's like, ugh. I said, what? It's intermission. She's like, I'm leaving.
This was
the
really?
What in the – why would they ruin the movie? And I thought –
the book was better.
Oh, my God. I mean, it just shows you that there's no right answer.
Right.
There's no
right.
better version. There is strictly how people take in that experience the first time.
Yeah. I have sent more people – I've never seen Jersey Boys, the show, mm-hmm. the play. I saw the film. Love the film. But I have sent more people to see Jersey Boys than any other show, because one of my best friends from college, Greg Burton, worked on the Broadway production in animation.
Oh, yeah.
And Greg would always, whenever I sent anyone there, would do a whole tour with them,
walk them
around and get them an autographed program and all this other stuff. So I've probably sent over time, conservatively, 40 to 50 people to the
nice.
Show.
Or do you have a little piece of the action? Or?
No,
yeah,
not yet.
It's the kickback.
Well, we could talk about that.
So let me steer you off of Jersey Boys now and land on Madam Secretary.
Yes.
Because you're working with one of the great actors, one of my favorite actresses, Taya Leone.
Oh, God, she's just the best.
Wow.
Yeah, she's really something, and she's really, I think, underappreciated in Hollywood. But, of course, if you said that to her, she would say, no, I'm fine. She's probably the most ego-free performer I've ever worked with. And when she's the number one on the call sheet, and she is the lead of our show and a co-producer, and it sets the tone for the vibe on the set. I mean, it is such a chilled, fun, hangout vibe. And she is one of the coolest people I have ever ever worked with. I mean, and her hours are insane, insane. And she's just fabulous in this role. She really is.
You know,
is
I first
incredible.
Met her when Scott Hamilton, my client, he had an annual golf tournament out here in Los Angeles.
At she golfs.
Country Club, and she would always participate.
Oh, yes.
With her husband. And we had lovely conversations in, you know, during that those few years of doing that. And
yeah,
she was
one
so
of the,
gracious.
One of the
and a good golfer.
Yes, and in one of the early episodes of Madam Secretary, she gets to take a few swings, and everyone kept wondering, so how did they get it? Did they put her head on a bar? I was like, no, she got up and swung the club.
Yeah, yeah. You just can't imagine that any actor does anything else.
Well, like I can't. Possibly... And so that's why I think people, you know,
well,
probably...
3 years of Jersey Boys.
Hello.
So they know what's knocking on that
it's not that. I audition. They will only let me sing high.
I just love that. You can't, you know, you're not right for the role that you did on Broadway for 3 years. I love that. Yeah. What is a great Tia Leone movie that Adam Sandler was in? It's probably the last.
Oh, Spanglish.
Spanglish. Yeah. Probably the last thing I liked Adam Sandler, and I just wish he'd do something more like that rather than the silly stuff.
When
but
she
I
was announced
Spanglish.
As coming back onto television, I was so thrilled by that. And Bebe Neuwirth is with you.
Oh, gosh, the cast. Bebe Neuwirth, Keith Carradine,
awesome.
and Jelko Ivanek, Tim Daly.
Tim Daly's also another
Yeah, he's in. Incredible, and too bad he's, you know, ugly. Who else? Well, we have great, because we're in film in New York, we have all these great Broadway people, everyone from Deborah Monk to Nick Wyman to B.D. Wong, Robert Klein. It's an incredible cast. Robert Klein, who, when I first met him, I accidentally said Robert Blake, and that was the wrong thing to
have you ever, ever seen Opera Pimp? Yeah. His bit, Opera Pimp?
Oh, of course. Yes, yes, yes.
It's hysterical.
He
What's
was
that?
One of the
Robert
funniest
Klein
people.
Does this bit called Opera Pimp about having two bitches doing cussy fun tutti up in Syracuse. He's got a whole bit about being a pimp for opera singers. It's one of the funniest things I've ever heard.
Oh, my God.
It's such a fun set.
We have to get to you. We have to talk about your gig at Catalina.
Let's do it.
Tell us what you're doing there.
Yeah.
How does it vary from the last thing you did, or does it vary?
Yeah, well,
are you doing the
song seen it,
that
you
know
have to come back.
I want you to do?
Oh, that song.
Yeah.
Well, I'm doing, here's what's happening. I'm doing two concerts. I'm doing San Diego this upcoming Monday night, May 18th at Martini's Above Fourth. That concert is completely stripped down, intimate, just me and Michael Orlin at the piano, and it's going to be back to the piano bar days. That I will do your favorite song.
Okay.
In L.A., you know, I'm doing with this 10-piece band. I'm doing these incredible arrangements of stuff from the Great American Songbook, stuff from Jersey Boys, stuff from my album. We're not doing that song, I don't think, unless you write me a check. But other than that, it's just, you've got to hear these musicians. They're absolutely incredible.
Well, we
and
have a little ten slice
pieces.
Off
are
of
you
his,
doing? Are you singing Crazy tonight?
Yes.
You're going to be singing Crazy tonight?
I am going to be getting and singing Crazy tonight.
You know what I was thinking?
What?
What would be really nice right now if you could just sort of extemporaneously sing Crazy tonight right off the
screen? Hold on. Hey, guys,
ready?
Bring the band in.
Ready?
Yeah. Yeah, ready?
Okay.
Here we go.
Three, ready?
Four.
Here
we ready?
Go.
Ready?
And
warm up.
And take it.
Boy, am I good.
Let's talk
about how good I am.
And you're like the breakaway to the satin shirt right here was amazing.
I always have a good silk cranberry shirt ready to go.
Just ready to break out.
I was so into that performance, I can't tell you. Real quick, what's a five-letter word for... Oh, I'm sorry.
Wow.
That was really wonderful. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks. We had fun. We recorded, wrote and recorded that down in Nashville with a great group of musicians. I just love it down there. Great.
And anyone from the album doing the live show?
No. No one from the album is... No, those are all Nashville guys.
Oh, okay.
That played on the album. Victoria Shaw produced that album, who just discovered a little band I like to call Lady Antebellum. So she's busy down in Nashville doing the next thing.
You like to call them that?
I like to call them that. The rest of the world calls them Hall & Oates. But that's...
Hall & Oates.
That's another show.
Paul doesn't know who Lady Antebellum is.
Oh.
You know who Lady Antebellum is? I had that once in college, but a little penicillin cleared it right up. So,
is that back to opera pit?
Yes.
I got this gal up in.
I got two bitches singing magic flute up in there.
Oh, so pretty much no one's listening to this. Is that the vibe
Why
that I'm getting?
That? Everyone's
it's
listening.
It's just because where your brain goes is just
so that's why they're listening.
That's why they're listening.
That's right.
You must have the freedom to know no one is listening, and I can do what I want.
I've been drinking since 10.
Oh, that's why.
Yeah,
okay.
This is not incongruous.
We call it brunch.
Is Michael still here?
What? I am.
Michael?
Yeah. Yes. Hello, darling.
I'm under the table.
Oh, there you are.
What kind of show is this?
Yeah, really? Oh, now, you know, Eric was talking about traveling on the road. And,
yes.
What was that?
I literally just got off the road from San Diego. I don't mean like on the road touring. Like, I just got out of my car. I got it at 4 a.m. this morning. I left to go do Good Morning San Diego down there. Came back. I tried to not stop. I tried to not pee, you know, the whole way. But I had to eventually stop in Chick-fil-A. And they want those gays to die. But cleanest bathrooms, I will say, on the road.
They do.
Very clean.
There it is.
Oh, thank God.
As opposed to very queen.
I actually... Okay, sure. Yeah, so. I went to a Chick-fil-A once, but it was too imposing to get by the effigy walking in. So
trouble.
Eric Bergen Live will play two performances only at the Catalina Bar and Grill, 6725 West Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood. That's next Thursday, May 21st. First day with a new mouth.
By the way, here's the easy way to say, if you can't find Catalina Jazz Club in L.A., it's literally right across the street from Chick-fil-A.
Oh, is there we really? Are.
It is.
Oh, and they're going to be really happy that you're there.
And their bathroom's down, so you know where to go.
There you go. Okay.
So it's Thursday, May 21st, and Friday, May 22nd. Both shows at 8:30. Doors open at 7 for cocktails and dinner service. And then admission. I can't believe these prices. It's unbelievable. We talk about this all the time, Michael. $25 to $40 with VIP seating. Once again, that's not parking in New York. Right. VIP seating for $50. Purchases made before May 15th. You got one day to get $5 off, because today's the 14th, right?
Today is the 14th.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
And ticketweb.com or by phone at 866-468-3399, and we will throw that information out a couple more times before the end.
He will be in San Diego on the 18th.
And New York in June, so there's that.
Where are you?
Birdland. Birdland in New York.
Exactly
a month later, the June 21st and 22nd at Birdland.
Nice. And when do you go back? You say that the show has been picked up for a second season?
We got a full season two starting in the fall. We start to film it in early July.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Awesome.
Good.
That's wonderful.
Back to work.
Fantastic.
Congratulations.
Can I go?
Can I pee finally?
We were going to save the rest of Crazy tonight, and we're going to have Eric play us off the air at the end of the show. So if you missed a little bit of the track that we played, we'll play the remaining 1:37.
I'm so down with that.
I've got a 2-minute track of me giving director's notes. That's a really great thing to take us out.
Really?
That'd be fun. Yeah,
I would
move a little further left, and then you know things like that.
A 2-minute track of
just
upstage, upstage,
louder.
The Greeks. It used to be a bomb. We're gonna do our little arts calendar.
Is because you're coming. We knew you were right coming, now. The two of you. He's cut loose.
I
he's
am.
Gone beyond.
That's right.
Men, I'm going to Vegas tomorrow, so I'm excited.
There you go.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
what it's
oh,
really
baby.
About.
Yes. Yes. Men want to.
Understudying Mariah Carey, I hear.
Yeah.
What happens at LA's song radio
Someone
stays
should.
At LA talk radio.
I'm stepping in. I'm stepping in for Susan Anton.
Yes. Again?
That's just.
Oh, man.
Oh, look at the time.
Yes.
Okay.
There you go.
Men wanted for hazardous journey, low wages, bitter cold, long hours of complete darkness, safe return doubtful, honor and recognition. An event of success. This was the copy of what may or may not have been an advert placed by Ernest Shackleton before his ill-fated attempt to cross Antarctica from sea to sea via the South Pole. The crew is forced to abandon their ship, the Endurance, having been crushed by pack ice. They have one path ahead, the White Road.
Experience an incredible story of survival under near impossible conditions and a display of strength of the human spirit when all hope appears lost. Irish Theatre of Chicago, formerly Shanachie Theatre Company, concludes its 20th anniversary season with the world premiere drama The White Road by Karen Targin. Directed by Robert Kaslarik, is that how
yes,
you say
that's
that?
Correct. Yeah.
Kaslarik, and playing through June 13th at its resident home, the Den Theater, 1333 North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago. Tickets are available at irishtheaterofchicago.org.
And theater has the R-E spelling. And I just got to tell you, I've seen work by this group a number of times.
Yeah.
They did The Seafarer, and I got to see their production of The Seafarer about 6 to 8 months, I think it was, after I saw The Seafarer on Broadway. And it was a really awkward place to be because I knew people in both productions, the Broadway production and the Irish Theater of Chicago production, mm-hmm. and I liked the Irish Theater of Chicago production better than the Broadway show. Oh. So they just do phenomenal work, and they deserve as much attention as possible. And this thing is getting killer reviews, and it's an amazing tale to do something of this scope on a stage that size. I mean, Conquest of the South Pole on a storefront theater stage is just, it's pretty amazing.
Well, we know our listening audience loves things when we talk about Chicago
of
your connection.
We don't do enough of that. Yeah. Our next guest is a director, choreographer, classically trained actor, and floor wax.
Yes, I am.
And acting coach. He has directed everything from film to live stage performance, and recently he directed the acclaimed and award-winning productions of The Fantastics, as well as a brave new concept for A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum for Panic Productions, which you mentioned earlier, didn't you?
Yes.
And let me see. Oh, yes. And his latest work is the Los Angeles County premiere of Violet, the musical, at the El Portal Theater in North Hollywood, opening tomorrow, May 15th.
Woo!
They made time for us, which we appreciate.
Thank you.
Please welcome another old friend of State of the Arts, Joshua Finkel.
Thank you. Oh, my goodness. Emphasis on the old and out. Thank you.
Okay. Again.
I have to, because it's too good.
Okay. So, Violet.
Yes.
Yeah. I was going, actually, Michael, I was supposed to do this production.
And what happened, Paul?
I had a conflict.
What was that?
Yeah, I can't
Susan
sit her
Anton.
Down. Hey! Thanks for mucking up my time, there, pal.
Your legs is just too long.
You were upstage, mister. Upstage by Eric Berg. If you're going to be upstage, let it be.
Exactly. So, Kristen Towers Rolls, who's a big friend of the show.
Oh, you're just going with those words today, aren't you? Kristen Towers Rolls.
Did I say that?
Yes, you did.
I told you, man. I can't have Baker's Mark before 11.
I think by the end of the show,
Kristen
you might
Towers
just be
Rolls.
Full Carol Channing. You may just go full.
Yes. When are we going to be on the radio?
Kristen Towers Rolls is wonderful in the title role.
Do you know our Carol Channing story?
No.
She was the second guest on our show, and she doesn't hear well, and she was speaking on a speakerphone. It was a phoner. And we were on the air for about 5 minutes before, and she said, "Well, so when are we going to be on the radio?"
Like, you've been on for 5 minutes, Miss Channing.
Yes. Goes,
oh, hello.
And then,
she's so sweet.
Then she's a doll. And then we were talking to her, and she's like, "So anyway, I..." And it just goes dead.
Oh, no.
And then
I would have called the ambulance.
And she calls back because she was reciting an Edna St. Vincent Millay poem at the time when it went dead.
Oh.
And then she called back and she goes, "I'm sorry, I was gesticulating and I hung up the phone." What a doll. So, anyway.
Yes.
Kristen Towers Rolls.
Yes.
Who is doing this production as Violet.
As Violet,
it's
yes.
It's not the first time she's done it.
No, she actually played young Violet at Sierra Rep several years ago with another friend of mine, Karen Gettysman, in the role of Violet. So,
oh, I know Karen.
Yeah, she's fantastic. Yeah. And so it was just been wonderful to have her kind of go from one role to the other role.
Right.
And not only, she's also the developmental L.A. producer of Kelrick Productions, who's producing this. They're out of San Luis Obispo.
Oh, okay.
And so she's kind of the L.A. kind of conduit branch of it. So it's been great to... She was just directed Sweeney Todd in the
which
same
was,
theater.
Which was terrific.
It was a wonderful, yeah, award-winning, yeah, amazing production. And then right into it, like the next day after closing that production, we were in tech for this production. So it was kind of, you know, double dipping. But it was also great for me. I've never directed this show before. So it was fun. I've seen it twice. I saw it years ago at Laguna Playhouse in the 90s, right out of off-Broadway.
Right.
And then it's been done, you know, around in various theaters. And then I'm a member of North Musical Theater Guild, and we did it as part of the season. I wasn't in it, but I saw it as the show, just a kind of a stage reading, book in hand, but, you know, staged, but book in hand. So it was the two times I've seen the show, and years and years apart. So it was fun to have this kind of fresh perspective on it, and then at the same time have the history from the inside that Kristen had to kind of break things down, sure. talk about some logistical things, and then fill out, so what did you guys use for backstory? And I would bring in other stuff we talked about. We really created our own production out of this and a lot of original nuances.
Can you give a little synopsis for the, without, we're still making people want to see the show, obviously, don't give too much away. But
it's a horrible show. You don't want to see it. No.
It's just slaughtering nuns and orphans. That's it. Nuns and orphans are just torched.
I got these two nuns.
You love that picture.
I have to see it immediately upon. I have the applause thing, and now I have to get the opera pimp.
Just do a search, opera pimp.
Yeah. So Violet is the story of a. Sorry. Okay. Oh yes, the story.
You were gesticulating too wildly,
and I just slammed the table. sorry about that. So it's a story about this young woman who's 25 years old. She lives in a very small mountain town of Spruce Pine, North Carolina, like sort of like the upper northwest part of North Carolina, just before the Tennessee border. And when she was 13 years old, her mother had died when she was very young, and barely remembers her mother, really. And her only kind of conduit to her mother is stuff that's been in the attic, and one of those is the Baltimore Catechism. Her mother was Catholic. Her father is basically an atheist. But she takes on sort of Catholicism and belief from reading her mother's catechism book, and really gets to learn about her mother from all the stuff she wrote in the margins. And she's really obsessed about getting to know about her mother. She grew up with her father, who's less communicative. And the horrible incident that really is the inciting action of the show, when she was 13 years old, her father was chopping wood in the, you know, the chop house out back, right. And the axe blade came loose mid-chop, flew off the handle, and flew into her face, disfiguring her with a huge scar and a broken nose, like all across her face, cheek to cheek.
And that's the first production number.
Right. It's called What About That Scar?
What About That Scar? I love that one.
And then, oh my God. Then, no.
Gives new meaning to a tap break.
Yeah.
Wow.
Stop it
now.
Stop it now.
I always thought Kristen was a two-faced actress.
Oh, no.
Okay, right. Back to the series.
So since then, obviously,
her grandmother
she was alive
now.
Oh my God. This poor girl went through so much bullying and ridicule because her father waited too long to really take her to the doctor and took her to one that just nearby down the mountain where you could find one, right. Who basically sewed her up like an old pair of leather shoes, a horrible, almost shoelace kind of scar across her face.
Right.
Traditionally, and we're keeping with that, the show is never done with the actress having the scar on her face. It's how people react to it, and it's spoken of. But there's different things I'm including with PowerPoint and stuff to kind of really cement location and time frame. So it goes between, the show flips between the first week of September in 1964 and going back to 1951 when she's 13. So we go back and forth between her past and her present a lot as she's sort of wrangling to put the past and that together. What she's doing in 1964, she saved up all of her money. Her father has passed away 3 years ago, and she saved up everything she possibly could to get on a Greyhound bus from Spruce Pine, North Carolina, across the southern route to Tulsa, Oklahoma, where a televangelist, who she watches on television, which is like the equivalent of Oral Roberts at the time,
right.
Does faith healing. And it's, you know, put your hands to the TV screen and you could be healed at the TV screen.
Sure.
She wants to have that scar healed. She's been to enough doctors. They all said it was too late. So she gets on this bus. And the trip is this bus trip, a lot of it, and who she meets on the bus trip. And it's set in 1964, just 2 months after the civil rights legislation was signed into law by Johnson.
And she's taking a bus through the South.
Through the South with, like, you know, African Americans and her own racism, the racism among the culture, just 2 months into saying, you know, integration is legal, segregation is outlawed, and how those people were catching up. But she really has always felt like a misfit, and she finds two soldiers who are on their way to Fort Smith, Arkansas to go to base and go to Vietnam. And she builds a relationship with Michael Spaziani, who plays Monty, and Jamal Bakari, who plays Flick. And I won't tell you who she ends up with, but they befriend each other. And she really finds, she hopes for the healing and the miracle that's going to happen from the faith healer. And she discovers that she's a little disillusioned by actually what she finds there, but finds the miracle and the healing a completely different way.
Right.
So, and when I was researching the show and also just kind of looking at all the current events happening around town now, you know, with the country and the world, with so much racism, so much stuff still happening with all the incidents in Baltimore and, you know, all the shootings and the riots and everything. And I said, my goodness, it's... You'd think we're certainly far more along than we have been 30, 40 years ago, but in some ways we aren't. There's still that tension in the air, and I thought, this is so current with some of the issues that are coming up in the show, and how we purge that through forgiveness and through sort of self-examination to find the inner miracle of connection and healing the scars and the wounds we all have, not only facially and externally, but internally as well. And that's what the show's about.
It's beautiful. Tragically topical about stuff.
And
like
basically
that.
A book called The Ugly Pilgrim. Right?
The Ugliest Pilgrim by Doris Betts is like a 13-page short story that it's based on.
And this score is one of my...
it's gorgeous.
I think I saw this show 10 years ago, Playwrights Horizons off Broadway, and the score is so brilliant. Janine Tesori, who's now, you know, Tony nominee for Fun Home on Broadway, which is equally a brilliant score.
Awesome.
I have loved this music so much for years. I mean, just go for the music alone and then discover what a great show it is.
It's like bluegrass, country, gospel.
Really? Yeah.
And blues, and Memphis blues, because it takes place, you know, one of the stops is Memphis, so there's a whole Memphis blues, like an Aretha section.
Yeah.
The score is infectious. The musicians are terrific. The singers are unbelievable.
How big is the cast?
80. 11.
Oh. 80.
It's symphonic. 80, but all little people.
Right. All little people. They'll fit in the Monroe Forum Theater. It's
well, that's why it's one bus.
Christian, of course, we must say about her that she is the granddaughter of Catherine Grayson.
Yes.
And she has inherited that beautiful, beautiful
voice. Gorgeous. She's gorgeous.
And a gorgeous actress.
And she's a fantastic actress.
She's the hardest working chick in show business, because she's directing left and right.
Yeah.
And,
she has three children,
three girls.
And her husband's in the theater business as well.
He's a music supervisor.
And the girls work, and they do commercials. And
she said, you know, I've really enjoyed this part of the process because I'm so looking forward to just having a chance to be a mom and be an actress during this thing and not have to have all the plates on the sticks. You could just kind of immerse into Violet and really enjoyed that, you know, so that was great.
And she directed Sweeney Todd.
She directed Sweeney Todd.
I love that her version of a break is starring in Violet. Like, that's more relaxing than what she normally does.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's my coffee break.
Really.
So we should tell our folks how they can see it. May 15th through the 31st and that's Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 7 p.m. at the Monroe Forum Theater at the El Portal Theater. It's a lovely 100-seat theater that is kind of in
it's almost an arena. It's more. It's almost three quarters. It's almost a full circle, five-sixths.
I know it has different configurations that they use. But and that, ladies and gentlemen, is at on Lancashire Boulevard, 5269 Lancashire Boulevard in North Hollywood. And for tickets, you simply call 818-508-4200. And or go to the elportaltheater.com website. You can purchase them through there as well.
Yes.
And theater with an R-E.
Theater. And also go down. There's that pub. I don't remember the name now, but just down the street, the sausage place.
Yeah. Oh, what's the thing that's right across the street? The great restaurant right across the street from the El Portal that I love.
The Federal.
That's what it is. Yes. Oh, yes.
Right. I was like, are we pitching this to something? I was like, of course.
Michael,
right, of course.
Michael's been there. Just read the cards, Eric. Just read the cards.
Where am I?
Yes. San Diego.
Chick-fil-A.
Yes.
No, the Federal One Direction. If you're facing the El Portal, you got the Federal One Direction. And if you go the other direction down about half a block, there's a little
inlet,
and there's a pub there that has artisanal sausages.
Bowen Truss?
This is
artisanal sausages.
I want to say Victory Pub or something. But
what's the place that's right down from there that looks, there's no windows?
Subway.
No. It's like sushi, but
Tokyo Dells.
It's like
a bar mitzvah. It's a bar mitzvah.
But from 1987.
I have the worst.
Tables dancing.
Yeah, it's a bar mitzvah. Yeah,
I don't want raw fish and that combined. I just have to put that out there.
If it's a bachelorette party, yes, you do. Other than that, no.
I went to Tokyo Dells once, and I wanted to pull my skin off.
In a good way?
Because...
Or
well, you say that like it's a bad thing.
Oh.
No, it's just that I love sushi, and I love the tranquility of it, and I love the sort of ritual of it.
This ain't a Zen experience.
And it was just like I felt like I was in Okinawa in... And it was the middle of World War II, and I was just being hated. Because I got this impression
suicide
that we were all
painless.
Being mocked.
Right.
I got the impression that we as guests were being sort of mocked. And it probably wasn't that, but I have this whole theory.
Because you couldn't sing or dance.
I have this theory that, you know, remember in the 80s when the Asian characters were really big on people's hats and clothes in
late 80s?
You don't remember the 80s because you're nine.
Yeah.
But there used to be that big thing in the late 80s where they had the Asian characters on everything, hats and headbands. And I was convinced every one of them said imperialist dog.
Oh.
You know, just little things that we would just wear and that we weren't in on the joke.
You know,
my favorite thing actually is going to Japan and getting T-shirts from Japan with just random English words.
Like carrot cake.
Yeah, or just our character men's type collection.
So are the T-shirts in Japan made in Japan?
Yes.
Oh, they are. Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
But it's just, like, I remember, like, I have this one, too. It was a crayon drawing of this girl, like, with pigtails and stuff in a skirt, and says, and with a gun, and says, girl with machine gun. And that was the shirt. I was like, that is awesome.
An audience for that.
Yes,
after,
there is.
Immediately after World War II, Japan renamed one of their major industrial cities USA because there was so much animosity they were literally able to mark the exports made in USA.
It's spelled out USA. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a true story.
Paul, it's that time.
It's that time.
We have to baptize
our
guests.
This is a time where we ask you to share a tale, a performance tale of woe. Something
nightmare
that went south
awkward.
During performance, some mistake, something that was embarrassing or humiliating or funny.
Could be anything.
Yeah, whoever.
On the stage?
Whoever, normally I tell you guys about this beforehand, but
I was wondering why they looked so stunned. Yeah.
I know. I didn't tell them. Either one of you.
Well, you go.
All right. Let's see, a couple different things. I remember once doing Thénardier, the master of the house, at the Schubert Theater in the original L.A. production of Les Mis. And, you know, I have all this makeup on and stuff, and I'm wearing my contacts, and I'm there next to Kay Cole as Madame Thénardier, and we turn to each other, and my contact lens just flies out of my eye. And the other one, like, goes down. Like, one's gone, and one's, like, south. So now I'm like... this, and I have to still stay on stage, and Kay's like, what's wrong? And I just said,
Ray Bolger is the master of the house.
Yes, and I was just like, so it was a very long exit. I was like, I'm going to leave and just keep tapping. Like, can I find this $200 lens in the floor? I was making it up like, oh, I'm grubbing for money. I'm grubbing as Thénardier for anything. Where's my contact lens? Where's my contact lens? Damn it. Oh, and I had to eat it, and
I'm
that was it.
Grubbing.
And then the turntable moved, and you just knew it became powder. It was gone.
Grubbing for lenses.
Yes, yes,
wow.
Grubbing
Eric
for lenses.
Bergen.
That was a bad one.
I think mine's sort of a two-parter spread out in years. I was at the Amundsen doing Jersey Boys in the first time it came through L.A., and I was standing on top of a trap door, and the trap door opened at the wrong time, and I went down into said trap door and, you know, pulled my back. They had to take me off stage in a stretcher, and it was in front of Gary Marshall in the audience that night,
man.
And all these people, and I thought, this is the worst thing ever. And I came back a week later, and when I came back, I told Chris, the house manager at the Amundsen, I said, I promise you, because it was hell for her trying to, you know, deal with audiences that night and like what to do while they put in the understudy. I mean, it was a thing,
sure.
Calling the ambulance and getting them backstage. So I said, I promise you, the next time I come here, I'll make sure this never happens again. Came back and did the national tour of Anything Goes.
Just going to bring that up.
10 minutes into the show, on stage at the Amundsen, I slipped and rammed into a metal beam on the stage, smashed my knee up.
Shoot.
Almost on the exact same spot on the stage where I hurt myself in Jersey Boys. I hobbled off stage, backstage, lying in the wing when they had to stop the show. Chris comes running backstage and goes, what happened? What happened? What happened? And I rolled over and said, I'm so sorry. I promise I wouldn't do this. I'm sorry. And she said, oh, good Christ.
It's you. I remember you.
Yes. And it was partially funny, and I felt so bad. But
Didn't something also happen to Rachel York? Didn't she have something happen?
No. She was just sick, and it happened to be the night that I hurt myself.
Ah.
So it was all of a sudden, they weren't expecting it, but their two leads were out.
Incapacitated.
And that one,
oh, my god!
Pretty wild.
That's just a luck.
I'll never work at the Amundsen again.
I was just
again.
I was going to say, you're not going to go back there again.
No.
It's just a risk.
My choice.
It's
like,
yeah. Me and Susan Anton
have a $5 million insurance policy.
Yes.
Gentlemen, a pleasure having you both on here. Let's throw this information
out there. But who more?
One more time.
Yeah, really. Where
do, who was the better guest?
Well, that's what we're going to ask our guests to vote about.
Oh, okay.
So send in your votes.
Vote for me. I'm 02. 02. Vote for me. 02.
Eric Bergen live. We'll be playing at the Catalina Bar and Grill. And Eric, do you have the what's the information for San Diego for people who are down
It's
there?
At Martini's Above 4th this upcoming Monday night, May 18th. It's all the information is at martinisabove4th.com.
Okay, and for here, we're talking about Catalina Bar and Grill. That's 6725 West Sunset in Hollywood. It's Thursday, May 21st, Friday, May 22nd, 8:30, and tickets are at ticketweb.com, or you can phone 866-468-3399.
And, of course, Violet, the musical, premiere at the El Portal Theater's Monroe Forum. And that is May 15th through the 31st, Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 7 p.m., 5269 Lancashire Boulevard, North Hollywood. And you can simply go to the elportaltheater.com website to purchase tickets or easily call 818-508-4200.
And we are going to listen to a little more of Mr. Bergen playing us off the air. But before we do, gentlemen, websites for yourselves. Eric, do you have a website?
Twitter and Instagram, Eric Bergen, E-R-I-C-H-B-E-R-G-E-N.
Joshua.
JoshuaFinkel.com, F-I-N-K-E-L. And I'm also there on Twitter and on Facebook, and you can tweet,
all
of them. Twerk, and all those things to me.
Tweet, yes. Twerk, and all
twerk.
Those things.
Yes,
feels good.
Gentlemen, a pleasure.
Twerk.
A great pleasure having both
thank
of you.
Thank you, guys.
Michael,
thank
as
you.
Always.
Yes, indeed. Back at you, Paul.
Listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle, right here on LA Talk Radio.